This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Haney. Maintaining a garden or landscape takes a lot of time and effort. Mulching, weeding, watering to keep everything healthy and looking good. You're doing all that work. Why not get a bit more out of it by substituting blueberries, vegetables, herbs, or other edible plants for some of the flowers you typically grow, or maybe add a fruit tree to your yard? Joining us to discuss edible gardening and to answer your questions are apple orchardist Marcia Linder with Hayfields Orchards, David Kester, Campbell County Horticulture Extension Agent, and Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm. And we're talking gardening and landscaping on this cold February day, but you know what? Spring's only 32 days away. And that's right, I'm counting it down because I am so ready for warm weather. And David, I imagine Melinda, Marcia, all of you got to be feeling the same way right about this point.
I've been to a couple conferences with some other horticulturists, and it's just amazing when topics come up and we're all just itching to get out there and start. And I think every time you have a winter like this where it's just been prolonged and kind of dreary, you are just anxious for that first break of spring weather.
Boy, isn't that the truth. You can join our conversation with your gardening and landscaping questions at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David, what exactly is edible landscaping? What's this whole concept about?
Well, it's kind of interesting that you're now, instead of maybe planting ornamental shade trees and shrubbery like that, you're incorporating some of the things that you can actually harvest and eat from. And blueberries are a great example. It's a very pretty plant, has a wonderful flower to it, and produces a really edible and delicious fruit here. Currants, gooseberries, strawberries can be a ground cover. There's just so many different things that you can get into instead of, get a return from these as well as, adding to your family's fruit vegetable needs.
Now, does this follow the same design principles as, say, for ornamental landscapes?
A little bit, sure. I think there's a lot of things that you can incorporate around a home, around a patio, things like that, that if you want to get double usage out of them, you certainly can.
Melinda, what are some good vegetables that you can use in edible landscaping?
Well, one thing that's kind of fun is to plant some onions just in your regular flower bed. And it's really, really easy to plant onion sets. If you can purchase onion sets and you just have to push them into the ground just a little bit. And I remember my mother doing that in her flower beds and her next door neighbor coming over to see what it was that was growing in the flower bed. But it's super simple. And even if you've just got a little bit of space in between flowers, you can always add some onions.
And Marcia, fruit trees work into this as well, don't they?
They do. And talk about small yards. I think the fruit trees and some of the gooseberries and things like that are wonderful if you try some different pruning techniques. You can, especially in Europe, they'll plant, a currant bush or a gooseberry bush and tie it to one stake and prune it so that it just grows in a column. So it takes up very little square footage, and it makes harvesting a lot easier, and it's decorative as well.
Now, what are some good fruit trees for doing this kind of thing? Just about any fruit tree imaginable, or?
Yes, and certainly like apple trees, pear trees, you can, the method is called espalier, which is basically growing a plant in a flat state. So you train it by pruning. You also choose a rootstock that the mature tree would only grow to, say, 5-6 feet tall, rather than planting an old-fashioned tree on a rootstock that would get 20 or 30 feet tall. So you don't have to do a lot of pruning to keep these nice different shapes.
David, I've seen what look like wild strawberries that growing in the woods. And I wonder, you see strawberries, blueberries, things like that. Are these things edible as well?
Some of them are, but I don't know how the taste of some of those are going to be. You want to be awfully careful with what you find in the wild and make sure you have it identified as an edible fruit. Some of them can be just delicious, an outstanding flavor to them, but go with somebody who's knowledgeable and just be careful and make sure that it is an edible fruit.
Now, what are some of the design elements that you should incorporate into edible landscaping?
Well, I think Marcia said it, with the espalier, there's just so many plants that we can do that with, pears and apples and getting the right rootstock. But you could really adapt a lot of these things by by pruning regularly every year, keeping them in bounds. And you can do some really creative things with them along a trellis or things like that. And you can do understory of around a fruit tree. You could put some of the ever-bearing strawberries, something like that, and just have a little ground cover as well as a fruit tree above it.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation about edible landscaping, or if you have any questions about landscaping and gardening. And Melinda, how do using edibles and a landscape design, how do they enhance a garden?
Well, there's a lot of really beautiful vegetable plants, like the sweet potato is really a pretty plant. And we do use versions of them in ornamentals, and I usually plant some flowers in the vegetable garden, and that's also good for bringing in beneficial insects that might help control some of your pests. If there are not aphids or other pests for the beneficial insects to eat, then they need to have sources of nectar and pollen. So I used to always put a row of flowers in every garden.
The green peppers or all the different peppers, that's a beautiful plant. And when it gets fruit on it of the multiple colors, and Swiss chard is one that has just become a really landscape plant almost in a lot of different homes. And kale is also another one that has a really nice texture to it.
I've seen the Swiss chard in municipal flower boxes in cities.
Mm-hmm. With that deep veining, it's a really pretty plant. One of my favorite design features are bamboo poles. So for years, I made bamboo teepees by taking 5-7 bamboo poles. They can be for the pole beans and things like that. You want poles that are about 7 or 8 feet tall. And you spread them out and you lash them at the top and then wind string around poles, leaving an opening so that children can come in. But then you just plant a bean seed at the base of every pole. You can also plant morning glories. And by the end of the season, you have this wonderful teepee with green beans hanging off the outside and the inside and beautiful morning glories. I've done the same thing with tomato plants this past year. Instead of a round teepee shape, though, I did four. And so it was a larger square at the bottom and tapered up. And it was a nice design feature.
That sounds really neat. That's a creative way to do it, isn't it? Using something like bamboo as part of the whole thing.
And you can lash it with green twine or even a colored twine if you want. But it adds that element of height and structure to a garden.
Melinda, I've seen plants that are labeled ornamental pepper plants, say at the local hardware store. Are these edible or are these for decoration only?
The ones that are labeled as ornamentals are probably edible, but they're probably pretty hot. So unless you can really tolerate hot things, might not want to eat them. But yes, and I do raise some with the flowers to put in with flower arrangements. And some of them have purple berries and some of them have variegated foliage. So they're really nice and pretty. And I like to use basil in flower arrangements. So I actually
that's an interesting idea. I like that.
Yeah. It helps out a lot when you're making flower arrangements to add some basil. It gives you, a lot of foliage and a lot of like a filler. And so, there's actually some that, some of the flower or some of the, seed sellers actually suggest as, use in flower arrangements. One's called cardinal basil. And then I also always like the purple basils for flower arrangements, for design features.
Now, I've seen these ads for hanging baskets for tomatoes. Do those really work? Melinda's chuckling there. Do those really work? And are they good for urban patio gardens?
No.
Okay.
They don't work very well. I mean, I guess you can grow a tomato in a hanging basket, but upside down, the topsy-turvy tomato. But no, they don't grow very well. You'd be better off to put them in a large pot and have them grow upright like they normally want to grow, or to put them in the ground.
But at the same time, I think it's fun for gardeners to experiment. So if I had, 10 plants, tomato plants in the ground that I knew were going to give me a guaranteed crop, I'd be happy with trying a few topsy-turvies or something kind of different, just because I like to experiment. I think it's fun to try something new, but I don't want to spend a lot of money or invest, you know, too much time in an experiment.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And as a suggestion, call early, because we usually start to get a lot of calls later in the show and it gets difficult to get them all in. So lines are open right now if you'd like to ask a question about gardening or landscaping with our horticulture experts. 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David, if you're trying edible landscaping for the first time, is it best to start small? And what's a good way to do that?
Oh, I think, you know, it just depends on your space. If you're going in containers, there's just some wonderful things that you can do with those. I think if you have children, I don't think there's a vegetable that's better than carrots. And we have some really interesting shorter ones that will produce a great crop and there is nothing better than a carrot that comes directly from the garden. It's so much sweeter than the ones that you buy at a store. And I think there's, you know, potatoes are great for kids because it's like digging for buried treasure. They're under there and it's a great plant that way. I always say radishes, but you know, you're not going to get kids to eat radishes all that frequently, but a radish seed, from putting it in the ground as a seed, 22 days later, you're able to harvest that. So it's a very quick turnaround, which is great. But lettuce, there's just some wonderful lettuce varieties out there, different textures and colors. And there's an heirloom, which is one of my favorites. It's called Drunken-Headed Frizzy Woman. And I just, you know, how can you not want to grow that kind of lettuce?
I don't know. And can I get that pretty much any place that sells seeds?
It's a catalog for, I've seen it. But I have a multiple year supply of that one.
That's funny. Pumpkins are another great crop for children. And the potatoes and the pumpkins, you can plant right next to your compost pile or in your compost pile. And so you really have nothing to lose, because generally the area around your compost is, you know, an area that's a little further away from the house. And so to just throw a few seeds in and see what you get, it's a lot of fun.
You know, I've always thought of pumpkins as being more of something you planted later, a fall type thing. But is that the
case?
No,
they do like it hot. So for me, after the 1st of June and up until close to July, you can plant them. If you plant them any later than July, you probably won't let them ripen and get to their full size. But, you know, after the 1st of June, usually the ground's warm enough to put those seeds in.
We plant ours on sometime around June 20, mm-hmm. 25th.
Okay,
and if
later.
You plant them later like that, you'll have less problems with them dying because of the diseases that are transmitted by the insects.
And you've got to remember, you really want those October 31st or for Halloween.
Right.
So you don't want them to be ripened in August. You really want them to ripen in September, you know, late September, early October.
Well, and orange is a pretty color, too. If you mix that in with your landscaping, that's a nice color
to
add in.
And there are so many new ones out there, the white ones and wrinkled ones. Red wart eye is another one. And then there's one called One Too Many, which is almost looks like it's bloodshot.
I love these names.
Yeah, there's just some really creative, and they have really developed some neat ones.
Or the gourd that's called Lunch Lady.
Yeah.
We probably just offended all the lunch ladies out there.
Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have. Melinda, in fact, I ordered the seeds this year. We're going to grow those for the first time this year.
What does that look like?
Well, they're a fairly good-sized gourd, and they're kind of all different colors and kind of lumpy and bumpy. So.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Funny.
No offense to any lunch ladies, right?
Right.
More with our horticulture experts after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Join the conversation, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are apple orchardist Marcia Lindner with Hayfields Orchards, David Kester, Campbell County Horticulture Extension Agent, and Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm. And you can call us with your garden and landscape questions at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got an email earlier from Dino, and in fact, he sent a picture along with it. And what he's talking about in the email is they have a huge tree in the front yard of his home in Arlington Heights. And he says, 5 years ago, that side of the yard was dug up to replace the sewer lines and took most of the topsoil. And last year they had gas lines put in, so that was another disruption. And he says, we've tried planting a ground cover on the site with some rocks piled up around the tree in front of the sidewalk, and it hasn't worked very well. And he says, I'm not sure what to do. So anybody have any advice for what Dino can do about this?
First of all, I would be very careful with that tree. It's we do have a picture of your site, and I would I'm kind of concerned. It's obviously a very large tree. It's obviously critical to your landscape. And before I did, and it sounds like there's already been a lot of excavation done around there, and you may have lost some very important roots to that tree. And I wouldn't hesitate to spend the money and actually have an arborist come in and just take a look at the tree to make sure it's in good health. And after that, I think you can add some soil. Soil is heavy, so you want to be careful about how much you use. And then you could, the more soil base you have there, probably the quicker that your ground cover is going to establish. So those are some of the things that I would do. But let's make sure that we take care of that tree first of all.
And Dino, I had something similar on my house a few years back, and it took a lot of, as David was saying, mixing in some good soil to get things to grow there. They stripped it down to the clay, and we had to keep putting topsoil in. So topsoil and a lot of patience. I think it took us about 3, maybe 4 years before we got anything to grow decently on that spot that was excavated. So good luck to you, and I hope you get that fixed. Let's talk with Jerry in Northside. Good afternoon, Jerry. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks for taking my call. I have 4 little blueberry bushes, which I've been nurturing for the last 3 years, and I put coffee grounds on them, but they don't seem to take off and don't bear fruit. And I did dig a pretty good hole for each of them at the beginning, putting even nails in the ground at the beginning there. I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do to recover them, or should I buy new plants?
I don't think you need to buy new plants, but I would. Did you acidify the soil? Did you add? Have you had a soil sample done?
I dug a pretty good sized hole out, about 1.5 feet deep, and pretty good size round, and put as much coffee grounds and other acidifying, even nails they suggested to help acidify, and some pine needles.
Okay.
And so I did what I thought was the max of acidifying the soil. But
did you add any sulfur?
I did not add sulfur.
Okay. I really think I would get a soil sample done just of that area around the root base of those plants, and then it'll tell you exactly where your soil pH is, and it will also tell you how much sulfur you need to bring that to make that more acidic. I would venture to say that it's just not acid enough. And you can acidify with fertilizers, but I think what you overall want to do is get the sulfur, get the pH down, and I think you'll have good luck with them.
Great. I hope you're right, because I'd look forward to some nice blueberries.
Jerry, thank you for the call. And David, what exactly do the nails do? Do they bring up the acid level in the soil?
Oh, I think that's an old kind of just a tradition that you do that. It also adds iron as it's oxidizing. But you're much better off to. And if I was going to plant 3 blueberry plants, I would not amend the soil, or I would not amend the holes. I would do the entire area. I would do maybe a 4 foot by 6 foot area and work organic matter and sulfur into that whole area, so that the entire life of those blueberry plants, they would not know what native soil was like. And I would have them all in that. Blueberries are really primitive plants. They have virtually no root, no fibrous roots, and so they're not real good at taking up moisture. Mulching is critical, and keeping organic matter and acidifying the soil is the secret to them.
Veronica from Springdale had called in earlier, and her question was, how can you keep the deer away from plants?
Well, I've had a lot of experience with deer having an orchard, and a few things work well. In the beginning, I like to just put a small cage of fencing around a tree, especially when the trees are whips or, say, a half inch in diameter, and they have that nice open trunk, which the deer really love to rub, especially their antlers on. But for us, we have used just 4-strand electric fence, a solar electric fence, and then I put a fake non-electric wire about 7 or 8 feet tall, and that's worked well. And then the poultry netting, which you can get at various websites. I know Premier One Fence, the numeral one, Premier One Fence, sells poultry netting, and you just unroll it. It comes in green or white, and the holes are smaller at the bottom to keep little chicks from escaping, and that also operates on a solar panel, and the voltage is very slight, so you can bump up against it, and it feels it's more of an annoyance than a hurt. So you don't have to worry about children and things like that really getting hurt by this fence. But for us, that's worked quite well, and you can remove it and move it somewhere else or put it away for the winter. Those are a few options that have worked.
And there's just enough voltage to startle the deer and make it stay away.
Exactly, yes. And a lot of times they'll actually provide, or you can purchase, a little cup to bait the deer. So it's a little round cup that you put peanut butter in. So the idea is you encourage the deer to come and touch their nose to this little cup of peanut butter. And like all of us, we learn after a few times that it's unpleasant.
I've used dried blood on some of my flowers that the deer were eating, the delphiniums and the sweet williams, and I've just sprinkled a little bit of dried blood that you can buy. You can buy it at any feed and seed store, and it does provide also nitrogen for your plants, and they don't come in that area.
There seems to be as many tactics, and really it's amazing, because some people have great success with soap, or even they'll collect hair at a barbershop, put that down. But you have to change these things, and we've used just about everything, but it's, and some people who have heavy deer pressure, they'll say to me, nothing works. But I really do think the electric fencing, the solar powered, is just a great advantage if you could do that.
Well, David, Rebecca wanted to know if there are any plants that deer don't like.
Maybe there are, and we have lists of those at the extension office, and she can call and ask for that. And there are a number that deer do not. There's not many, but there are some that they don't favor.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Jenny in Covington. Good afternoon, Jenny. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Just curious about older sections, a lot of pretty older neighborhoods around Cincinnati and northern Kentucky, and wondering if they, if your panel recommends, is there any kind of easy testing for lead, the presence of lead in the soil, if you're talking about edible gardens?
There are. You can the University of Kentucky does not, but we use a lab in Owensboro, Kentucky, called Waters, and for any kind of community garden site, I just think that's a great way to start, and just eliminate that as a possibility. And we have had some sites within urban areas where they have tested high in lead, arsenic, and cadmium. For some reason, is another one that we are somewhat wary of. So definitely contact your county extension office, and they will help you get that sample taken.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Priscilla in Blue Ash. Good afternoon, Priscilla.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
I have a cold, so if I cough, I apologize ahead of time.
No problem.
One of the things that I have done with my teepees is plant Spanish flag or cardinal flower in with it. They're, that little delicateness and the bright color, it just sets it off. And then one of the things that we did with our raised beds is between the raised beds, so over, we planted it in one and then planted it in the other, we put an arbor. So I grew green beans, actually three-color beans, tricolor beans, on one side, and I grew cucumbers on the other. And I had tomato plants in with the cucumbers. We decided that we, at the end of the, toward the end of the season, we wanted to extend the arbor to the whole, it's only like 4 feet, 4 feet. So we wanted to extend it to the other 4 feet of the raised bed. And when we did it, the tomato vines just took off on it.
So you had a kind of a walkway in between there, underneath it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah. That's a great
Sounds
idea.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It turned out really nice. And then I've also planted a bunch of fruit. I have like a little tiny yard, okay? But I planted a bunch of fruit trees, like 6 fruit trees, and I'm estayeing them.
Great. You might also try grafting, which we're going to have a class in March, but, you know, that's taking a branch and splicing on, if you will, a branch of another type of apple to just give you even more variety in your small yard.
That's a great idea. We planted 2 kinds of pears, a sickle and another one. And when I lived in southern Indiana, actually I think Parks sells a pear that has 3 different kinds of pears on it. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more expensive, but it has 3 of the most popular, including Bosque, and there's one that begins with an A, and I can't, Anjou, and I can't remember the 3rd one that they have, but those are excellent. And then I've also planted plums, and I've discovered on plums that you need a second plum. Mm-hmm. Even though it says that they're self-fertilizing, they just don't produce well if you don't have a second one. So I've got plums and I've got an apricot.
Great.
Well, your yard sounds great, and yeah. It brings up a good point that sometimes in a small space you can have a more interesting garden and have more things going on than someone who has 4 times the acreage. So it sounds charming.
Priscilla, thank you so much for the phone call. And she brought up a good point. Do you need a male and a female fruit tree to get fruit?
David, I'll let you take that question.
Peaches, if you have one peach tree, you're going to get peaches off of it. But as she said, you can actually increase your production if you have 2 of them blooming at the same time. Apples, we really have some pollination. We do need pollinators. So you do have to have more than one apple variety, and it has to be blooming at the same time as the other and for cross-pollination. However, ornamental crab apples will also pollinate our fruit-bearing apples.
Marcia, you were starting to talk about some of the classes that are available for people to learn about these things. Can you tell us about some of the events that you have coming up? And I understand that they're in conjunction with Turner Farm, right?
Right.
Yeah, and there are some great classes in general for fruit in Cincinnati. Probably not enough, but you can always check the Civic Garden Center's website. They typically have a class on maybe pruning or maybe not grafting, but maybe hardy varieties for this area. Campbell County Extension has a wonderful selection of individual classes. So a class just on brambles or berries, a class just on gooseberries or apples. And then Turner Farm has classes as well, of lots of different types. But the 3 of us, Campbell County Extension, Turner Farm, and myself, are hosting 2 workshops for fruit this season. The first one is this Saturday. Unfortunately, that class has filled, but it will be on pruning. And so people are going to come out to our orchard and have a hands-on demonstration at everything from new whips or beginning trees to rejuvenating some old trees. We do have 1 other class, though, that still has room, and that is offered at the end of March 22nd, I believe, and that's a grafting class. So it's how to take how to propagate apple trees and pear and plums and peaches, things like that.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation, and let's talk with with Sue and Versailles. Good afternoon, Sue. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you very much. I was calling to see if you have any advice on squash blossoms or pumpkin blossoms in terms of the best varieties for cultivating so you can get some good blossoms for edible situations. I think I've seen that they batter them and either fry them or bake them. So I didn't know if any of you had any experience and good suggestions for that.
You know, there I think there are even some varieties that are even grown for that purpose. And I can't tell you exactly. I know they're available commercially, that there are some that are grown specifically for they have a blossom that is a little bit larger and also holds up a little bit longer. I'll have to get you that information because I can't remember it, but it's been very few times that I've actually had that, but it is kind of a fun, delicacy, really.
But you're also wise to choose a good variety because I have just plucked some blossoms off of my pumpkins and squash in the past and cooked them, and they were rather bitter. So I think doing a little investigation and finding a variety that might be a little sweeter and, as David said, a nice size would be beneficial.
We were talking earlier about testing soil for various things. How much soil, this is Eileen from Lebanon who actually wanted to know the answer to this. How much soil do you need for a test and where do you send it and how long before you typically get the results back, David?
Okay. You need about a pint total, but what you're doing is in your garden, the test results are only going to be as good as the sample that you collect. So you want to go to your garden and make sure that you have a representative soil sample that represents all of your garden. So do all the areas, mix that together and bring a pint of that to your county extension office and they will send it down. But, and if you've got a problem area that is different, make sure you sample that separately because you don't want to mix that in with your desired areas. So problem areas, separate those. If it's a fruit area, separate that. And, all those can be taken. You want to go down 4 to 5 inches deep and it should be air dried before you bring it in and make sure it's in an uncontaminated plastic container.
And how long does that usually take, David?
It'll take about 2 weeks.
Okay. We'll continue our conversation about gardening and landscaping, and we'll get to your phone calls after the break at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Joining us this afternoon, our apple orchardist, Marcia Linder, with Hayfields Orchards, David Kester, Campbell County Horticulture Extension Agent, and Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm. You can join our conversation with your questions on gardening and landscaping at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Marcia, you wanted to add in something about the soil testing question we had earlier.
Yes. If you live in Hamilton County, you can contact the Hamilton County Soil and Water Conservation. Last year they had free tests, or maybe they were $2. It was very nominal. And that will give you a basic soil test. And they had very clear directions on what type of sample to take. But if you want a really more detailed analysis, you could ask them where that would be sent and what type of test that would be.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join our conversation. And let's talk with Louise in Miami Heights. Good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi there. Pretty simple question. Is there a particularly good or bad time to put down either compost or manure in your yard?
The manure, if it's fresh manure, it should be down 120 days before you actually put a crop into it. If it's for your vegetable garden, 120 days is what we recommend that you do that beforehand. Compost, I don't see, as long as it's not frozen, I think, any time that you can put that down is just, every year I make a lot of it and every year I run out of it. So I think use it and, you can do that any time of the year.
Okay. Thank you very much, Louise. We appreciate the phone call. And let's talk with John in Western Hills. Good afternoon, John. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Enjoyed the program. I know that fences make good neighbors, and I've got one of those, but I've also got neighbors that have a swimming pool, and they have a lot of kids in the summer. So I'm looking for a fast-growing, like a shrub or tree that I could plant along my fence that would give me a little noise protection. And is there anything you can recommend?
When I was in the nursery business, we used a plant called Emerald Arborvitae, which probably overused it, but it is an excellent plant at providing screening. It's not very expensive. You can buy that in the spring of the year at a lot of the discount type places, and put it as, you know, give it some space in between plants. It's more of an upright. I think it'll give you a good screen in a relatively short period of time. But, you know, with a lot of those things, you're really blocking the sight more so or less so than the noise. Noise is still going to come through.
Okay, John, thank you very much for the question. Let's talk with Layla in Preble County. Good afternoon, Layla. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you so much. I have a very quick question. We love melons, but we can never grow them because of some sort of bug problem. Do you have any helpful hints?
Okay. Melinda, Marcia, David, anybody got any tips on this one?
Well, we have problems with some of the diseases that are vectored by insects also. And so probably selecting the right variety is important. And then you can start those inside and then transplant them outside, or you could just put the seeds outside. And you might want to put the plants under floating row cover early in the season to keep the insects off of them when the plants are small. But then you would have to take the floating row covers off when the plant blooms so that it can be pollinated. And that would probably be your best bet. And I don't know, Dave, do you know any varieties that are good, that are more resistant?
There's just so many neat new melon varieties out there, the individual-sized ones, and they're just so sweet, and they're just great. But I love the floating row covers. There's also some organic dust that I think if you put that around the base of the plant, along the vine, you'll get pretty good control of the vine borers and the cucumber beetle and things like that. And those are really, really tough to control. But I like the organic dust in that situation.
What kind of dust do you know?
Well, there's some pyrethrins. There's some rotenone, if you can find it. That's a little bit iffy now.
Rotenone's no longer allowed in organic agriculture.
Okay. I think there's just some dust that I have seen available. I'm going to go try to find some. And I find those to be more effective than anything else.
You might try a new location, too, because especially with melons and cucumbers and things like that, you really shouldn't plant them 2 years in a row in the same place. And sometimes if things just don't like a particular spot, just try a new section if you have another spot in your yard that might work for them.
Yeah, rotenone it's not only, I think, has been dropped, but it's also they're not making it anymore because they're not selling enough of it. And it's very toxic to fish
and bees pollinators.
Thanks for the call, Layla. We appreciate it. Marcia, just wondering have to hit the mute button here myself for a second. How many trees do you have, and how much fruit do they produce each year?
Well, I really keep telling myself I'm going to stop planting, but but I ordered, I don't know, about another 20 trees, and we're going to be grafting some more. I have about 100 trees on just about a half acre. So some of my trees are semi-dwarf or semi-standard, I like to say. So they're fairly large trees. But in the last few years, I've been planting more trees on smaller rootstock. And volume, we get enough to make anywhere from 50 to 75 gallons of cider, plus selling some fresh fruit. The clean fruit I try to sell. And okay. And there's always a market for organic fruit.
How long have you been doing this?
We moved to this property in the late 1980s, and luckily there was an old orchard there, so that's why we sort of inherited, if you will, this orchard. And as those older trees died, we kept replanting, and the deer would usually kill about half of them until our fencing methods got better. But it's just been in the last few years when I've had more time since my kids got bigger that I could really start to work more in the orchard and fine-tune it, if you will.
This is something you pretty much taught yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I always I lived on farms growing up, mm-hmm. and I love gardening, and I love fruit. You know, I love canning and making things out of the fruit. But yeah, it's really, my motto as I've gotten older is, come on, how hard can it be? You know, that really with any subject, and now with the internet and great books, and with panelists like this, you can, really kind of sleuth out, what the problems are. And I like to experiment.
And that's a good point. Experiment. It pays to be adventurous, doesn't it, Belinda?
It does. Yes.
Yeah.
Marcia's orchard is just perfect for demonstrations. And it's, you know, we have old trees there. You've got new trees. You've got all kinds of varieties. You've got trees that have been pruned properly for decades now. And it's just a great sight because you can see it all in one stop.
Now, we had a question coming about growing garlic and ginger. Do you need special bulbs from a grower? And how much care do they need? Is that a Melinda question?
Yeah. Usually for garlic, you do, if you do purchase garlic from a store, they have sprayed something on it to keep it from, sprouting. So, but if you purchase some organic garlic from a store, that would be fine because that would not have been treated. So when you do plant garlic, you normally just take a garlic bulb and take it apart into its cloves and put those in the ground. And you do plant those in October, usually mid-October, and then you harvest it in July. So, wrong time of year, but you can think ahead and get your garlic ready to go. And then ginger, I do know there are some people growing ginger in this area, but they're usually doing it with some winter protection in a high tunnel, and I believe they have ordered the ginger in from maybe Hawaii or warmer areas like that. I don't know if you really could just buy ginger from a store and get that to grow?
I don't think so. I think it's a different
type of,
and it is. They do most of what I've seen is in high tunnels.
But there are people in this area growing it, mm-hmm. and and as far as I know, they've ordered it in from Hawaii.
Okay, we had a question from Randolph, and it appears that bugs are a very vexing problem right now. Tomato plants last year, he said they were covered with stink bugs, and he wonders if anybody has any suggestions on how to deal with that.
Stink bugs.
They're just tough to begin.
They are. Yes. They are. And there's not a lot. They're kind of resistant to an awful lot of things. I think neem is pretty effective on them. Neem is a broad spectrum. It is an organic product. Some of these things you're going to get some control of, but maybe not 100%, and you'll have to reapply. But I would think that the neem would be your most effective.
Any other advice?
No, we really actually haven't. Fortunately, I should knock on wood that we haven't had too much of a problem yet.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Mazarin in St. Bernard. Good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon, Mr. Haney. I have one question from your panel. If I want to plant azaleas, how deep should I dig the hole? And also the ratio of compost in the regular soil? That's my question.
Okay.
Azaleas are in the same boat as blueberries. They're an acid loving plant, and I always say if you're going to buy a $30 azalea, dig or plan on a $50 or $60 amendments and hole, and you really need to add a lot of organic matter, peat moss. I love these pine bark fines to mix into that soil, and then also add some sulfur to it, and I've got a recommendation of a couple pounds of sulfur per 100 square foot should do it. Do that as soon as you can prior to planting the azaleas. You cannot change a pH of a soil overnight. It takes a while to bring that back down, so you want to put that sulfur down as early as you can. When people talk to me about planting blueberries, I always say, you know, let's get our site ready a year in advance, because it'll take that long to acidify and get the organic matter in. But all those things, and really go to a good nursery and ask them. I was fortunate enough to work for a very good nursery, and I can still drive around Northern Kentucky and I can see the homes where we installed the azaleas and rhododendrons, because he really knew, we knew how to do it right, and those plants have flourished all these years.
Let's talk with Susan in Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Susan. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I am perplexed. We have a backyard area that fills in beautifully every spring with honeysuckle, as well as the mature trees that are there. It's just a little woodland area of our backyard, and it's a beautiful cover and protection and privacy. It attracts butterflies and other, birds, and it seems to be a nice protection for birds getting away from a couple of neighborhood cats. But everybody tells me, yank it out, it's invasive, it's destroying something. And I know there's a reason why they refer to honeysuckle as invasive, but isn't it possible for it to be incorporated into a more natural setting and actually be functional and manageable and fragrant and nice?
Well, I think any weed is just a plant that's not wanted in a spot. I mean, I have areas where I leave the honeysuckle, and I have other areas where I cut some of it out and add some native redbud and dogwood and things like that. There's a wonderful entomologist and biologist team, Rick Dark and Doug Ptolemy, who have written some interesting books about native plants versus non-native plants. And I guess the bottom line, they say, is that a native plant is host to a lot of insects and caterpillars, whereas something like the Asian honeysuckle might not support very much wildlife in the form of insects. But I think, you know, if the honeysuckle works for you, I don't think you have to take it out. If it acts as a screen, it's green and pleasant. But you might try taking a little bit out and adding some redbud, and then you would get that wonderful color.
That plant was actually introduced intentionally. So it was actually brought here, and it has really adapted well to our conditions.
Anybody else want to weigh in on Melinda honeysuckle? Is it your?
Well, I agree with the caller. I didn't know that I really wanted to really known. But we have honeysuckle on the property, and I actually do not object to it, because it does hold its leaves way late in the fall. It is a nice screen. It smells good when it blooms. And so I'm with her. I don't really hate honeysuckle, so I'm not. But I, the only thing I feel bad about is that if it's producing fruit, then it's probably producing seeds, and maybe it's seeding in other people's property, then they don't want it. And it is really difficult to get rid of.
It was one of my mother's favorite wild plants.
Wow.
It's kind of hit home. Marcia, David, Melinda, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Apple orchardist Marcia Lindner with Hayfields Orchards, David Kester, Campbell County Horticulture Extension Agent, and Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier, with help from Kevin Reynolds. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Caney.